Oh, yeah, I'm good to go. Feel great.
Phil, you guys claimed Rashawn Mathis earlier this week. I'm just wondering.
Melvin.
Yeah. Just wondering what made you guys interested in him and what made you want to bring him in here.
You know, we were on him all the way back into college. Northern Illinois. I think we were pretty close to getting him, but he ended up signing with Tampa, and then it's kind of worked its way through. But, you know, he has good size, good length, runs well. You know, tough kid. So, you know, had an opening on the roster, you know, with Nate's situation. So, you know, opportunity to look at him.
You talked about defensive backs tackling the other day. I'm just wondering, in general, does it make it difficult for you guys as an organization to find defensive backs that fit to what you want to do here? Because you do ask them to do a lot of different things, whether it's outside or inside or supporting or things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's... I mean, I've seen worse, let's put it that way, you know, other positions, other situations. I think what we're looking for is realistic, you know. But, I mean, we're always, you know, always look for competition, always look to get better. I mean, don't get me wrong, I don't want to take anything away from the coverage ability of corners now. I mean, in National Football League, you can't win if you can't cover. I mean, you have to be able to cover, but... You know, tackling's part of it, definitely part of it for us. But, I mean, you don't want to put a bunch of guys out there that can tackle but not cover. I mean, that's a big problem, too.
First time you had a chance to talk to you since we learned of Nate, you know, going on season-ending injured reserve. What is your reaction to
that? Well, it's a tough break for Nate. You know, Nate works really hard, you know, in the off season. It's one of our off season award guys. I think his work ethic and his training and all that is as good as it can be. Just unfortunate. I mean, it wasn't really that big of a hit or anything. It was just one of those things.
You look forward. You probably feel pretty fortunate just to have a player like Marcus, you know, who could be part of that. You have a couple different options, you know, as to how you want to configure it without revealing. I assume you're not going to tell us what you're going to do. If you'd like to, I'll open it up to you. But what are your thoughts on just having options and how you'll go about making the decision?
Well, I mean, depth's really important on your football team. So to have depth at every position really gets – you never know when you're going to need it, but you know you're going to need it. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. We've got, you know, guys in this building that we feel like will be able to take care of the situation. We'll, you know, figure out the best, what we feel like are our best options before game time and be ready to go.
Just thinking about it, I was reflecting back on the story you once told about Matt Light when he first came in and you tried him on the right side and turned out he was just a left guy. Specific to Sebastian, we obviously saw him play left in his rookie year. What do you see from him in terms of, you know, was that good what you saw when he played left? And, you know,
Bologna Farini his rookie year. So, yeah, Sebastian's played left and he's played left and right well. Marcus, you know, has been playing left and right this year, he's played them both well. So, you know, again, that's part of the flexibility that we try to build in. You know, throughout the course of the year, training camp and OTAs and practice squad, scout team reps and things like that, you know, where guys work in different positions because, you know, when you only take 7 linemen to a game, you know, everybody's got to double up somewhere. So it's just all part of it. So, I mean, I think we're fortunate that we have guys here that can do that, that have flexibility, and we'll just try to see what we feel like our best options are for Sunday.
Vary on the opponent. Who you play at left tackle? Who you play at right tackle?
You know. Sure, good. Yeah.
I mean, as opposed to Nate, who is somebody you'd plug in there, he'd be your left tackle no matter the opponent. Could change.
Well, as a rookie year, he played tight end and right tackle. So, yeah, I mean, it just would depend. I mean, again, some players have more position flexibility than others. If they have it, then you know, there may be an opportunity to use it. If they don't, then you try to plug them in that spot and, you know, let them go and let them play good. Steve Neal, he played one spot, but he played it well. And so that wasn't a guy we were going to move around. Steve was playing right guard. And that's pretty much all he ever played for us. But he played it well, and we had other players that were, you know, more had more position flexibility, and we moved some of them. So that was Dan Copeland. Dan played center. That's it. Never played anything but center. So there's nothing wrong with that. But if you have guys that have position flexibility, you know, that's good too. And at some point you're going to need that, you know, from somebody. But not everybody has it. Guys that can play one position well, great. You know, we can use that.
Other side of the ball, guy with local ties, Anthony Costanzo, went to BC, obviously. I wonder what you see from him at left tackle in his fifth year.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, he's done a good job for him.
Anything that he does particularly well or anything you've noticed about him?
Well, I mean, anybody who plays left tackle in this league's, you know, got a lot of challenges every week, so.
Coach, we know that the NFL is designed where teams that lose are rewarded with higher draft picks and supposedly better players, yet you continue to find gems, diamonds in the rough. What is it that you think maybe you're seeing in your players that others aren't?
I don't know. I mean, every player is different. I'm sure every team in the league has players on their roster that weren't drafted or that were released by other teams. That they picked up. So, you know, sometimes it's a system, sometimes it's situation that guys are in, you know, injuries or things like that that prevented a player from, you know, showing what he could do or, you know, for being fully visible. But, you know, we've been right on some guys, we've been wrong on them, so has everybody else in the league. I don't know. It's a hard question to answer. There's a lot of moving parts, and each situation is different. Every guy's got a story. I mean, literally. So you just try to keep making the best decisions you can. Some work out, some don't. And just, you know, keep churning.
Bill, how much extra work typically comes with preparing for an opponent that either doesn't know or is choosing not to say who's going to start at quarterback?
Yeah, again, we prepare for all the guys on the active roster. We just don't prepare for one guy, and it wouldn't make any difference, you know, last week. Look, Romo was out, so we didn't prepare for Romo. But, you know, it was Whedon, it was, you know, Castles, Moore. I mean, you know, we don't know what they're going to do. And, look, after the first play of the game, anything could happen. Whoever you think's in there could be somebody else anyway. You know, or the same thing with, you know, Bortles or Roethlisberger, any of those guys. I mean, Roethlisberger, you know, he's there to start a game, can't finish the game, he's not there the next week. I mean, that's the NFL. It's like that at every position. So we know who the players are, we know who the backups are, we think, based on what we know, what we've seen, what we anticipate to happen. So who'd be the next perimeter corner, who'd be the next inside corner, who'd be the next safety, who'd be the next dime guy. Maybe they wouldn't use dime, maybe they'd use nickel. Who'd be the next nickel guy, you know, whatever it is. And so we have to be ready for that. It's one play away from happening. So we always prepare for all the players that are on the active roster. Then we come to the game, and before the game we cross off the seven guys that are inactive. So, okay, this week they only have two tight ends active, or they only have whatever, five linebackers, or, you know, here's the guys that are inactive, whether they're injured or whether they're inactive for other reasons, whatever it happens to be. Then we look at it before the game, you know, that hour, well, the, you know, the meeting we have before the game, after the inactive list has come out, and we can cross some guys off, and maybe that gives us an indication of, you know, maybe what type of game, a little bit more information what type of game it might be, you know. I mean, if a team's got maybe it looks like extra DBs on the, you know, on that active for our game and maybe less defensive linemen, maybe that's an indication it's going to be more of a nickel game, or, you know, vice versa. If a team keeps extra tight ends and running backs and fewer receivers, maybe it's, you know, an indication they're going to try to, you know, play bigger, you know, that type of thing. So, but until that point, we work with everybody. And, you know, with all due respect, I mean, you know, I know a lot of people live and die on the injury report, but you know, I kind of really care what's on the injury report. I mean, look, I don't know how these guys are going to be either. And we can put down whatever we want. But, you know, they're humans. Some get better, some stay the same, some don't get better. You know, there's no way to know for sure. And there's a lot of times it comes down to game time decisions. So I'm saying that about our team, and I'm with them. I'm talking to our doctors and trainers every day. But, you know, other teams are going through the same thing too. So just because a guy's on the injury report and like whatever he's listed at, I mean, that doesn't really mean anything. Guys that, you know, aren't well can make quick recoveries. Guys that are well can, you know, not turn a corner. So we're ready for those guys too. I mean, honestly, I don't even care what's on the injury report. I really don't even look at it. You know, I mean, unless the guy's definitely out, then that's okay. If he's not, then to me, we got to be ready for him.
Kind of follow up based on your answer there. How often do you guys take the opponent's inactive list coming 90 minutes before the game and alter your strategy?
Well, I mean, I guess it would depend on what's on that list, but I'd say probably not too much. I mean, look, you know a lot more after two series in the game than you will looking at that inactive list. I mean, obviously, if there was a player that was a critical player for you in your game plan that wasn't going to play, then maybe that would, you know, alter something a little bit. I mean, if you're going to double receiver and the receiver's inactive for the game, then, okay, we're not going to double him. So, you know, that knocks that call out. Do you replace that with a different call, or do you go to the next guy, or do you just say, okay, well, we're not going to double anybody, we're just going to – here's what we're going to do. I mean, but I'd say those situations are not that frequent. If you had that situation, you know, going into the game, like, okay, this guy's got a bad hamstring, not sure whether he'd be ready to go or not. Okay, well, then we're going to sit there and say, all right, well, look, if the guy plays, then here's what we're going to do. If he doesn't play, then, you know, or maybe he doesn't play all the time because, you know, we know he's dealing with something. Maybe he's in on some plays and out on some plays. Well, then, you know, we wouldn't game plan him when he's not on the field. So, you know, there really aren't too many of those situations where, you know, out of the blue, somebody that you think is going to play that's a very significant part of the game plan that totally catches you by surprise. But if that were to happen, you know, say a guy got suspended, or, you know, he had a family member die, or, you know, whatever, came down with some bug or something the day before the game, then it's no different than if he got hurt on the second play of the game. I mean, make that adjustment.
Why are the first 15 plays such a big deal to how a game might go? Because I know a lot of coaches, including yourself, have always said, you know, the first 15 plays will tell you a lot, like you said, more than any pregame planning will. Why the first 15 plays?
Well, I think it depends on the game. I don't think that's necessarily true every week. I think some weeks it's true, some weeks it isn't. You know, it just depends on the way that team tries to approach it. You know, I mean, some teams have a game plan, and they, whether it be on offense or defense, and they kind of start out playing that game plan like Dallas did. I mean, you could see that game plan pretty, you know, the first series. I mean, halftime adjustments, I mean, it's ridiculous. Why wait till halftime? There it is, the first series of plays. You can see what they're going to do. So better start dealing with it. There are other teams that, you know, maybe anticipate that you're going to play a certain way, and they script the plays. And a lot of times the scripts are to break their tendencies. Okay, we've done this, so we're going to start the game and show this, but do that. You know, we want to get the ball to this guy because we want to try to get him going, so we're going to put this play in. And so maybe those first few plays are just how they want to start the game. Maybe that's not really the game plan at all. Maybe that's just they want to break their tendencies. They want to show you something. They want to throw a deep pass to back the corner off so they can throw in front of them. They want to throw a quick pass to get the corner up so they can throw behind, you know, I mean, whatever. So sometimes those plays are significant in terms of, okay, here's the way that, that it looks like they're going to play us. Sometimes, you know, it's not. Sometimes a team will come out and play, you know, some zone coverages in the first few plays to kind of see what formations you're using, see kind of how you're, you know, trying to attack them offensively. And then once the game gets going, then, okay, here they are. All right, now let's go after them, you know, that type of thing. So it's not always, you know, it doesn't always declare that way. A lot of times it's those first few plays are just a little bit of a mirage. You got to be careful about, oh, this is what it's going to be, when really that's not what it is at all. That's just the way they want to start the game. That's not really the way they want to play the game. So it's there's no, I don't think there's any set book on that.
Bill, just to get back to the offensive line. Last question. how would you characterize Sebastian's athleticism? It seems like you guys have had athletic tackles, but with Sebastian in particular, how has that helped him the time he's been here?
Good. I mean, Sebastian's a good athlete. You know, he's long. I mean, talking about guys like Sebastian and Solder that are tall, that have long arms, that, you know, are, I mean, they're just, their length is hard to get around. And then we combine that with, you know, foot quickness and technique, then, you know, that those guys are tough to get around. So, you know, against smaller players, you know, the smaller defensive end types, sometimes that the tackles see, you know, they can, just with their length, cover those guys up. With some of the longer defensive ends that they see, then their length matches the defensive end's length, so they don't get out lengthed, if that's a word. I don't think we had that at Wesleyan, probably. That's why I didn't score too well in the SATs. But you know that. But that you don't get. They don't gain an advantage on length. They don't gain an advantage on, you know, they have an advantage in terms of, you know, overall size and, you know, wingspan against some of the smaller guys they play against, and the bigger guys out there that, you know, might be, you know, power rush type defensive ends. They're strong enough to anchor down against, you know, those type of players, you know, the 285-pound, the Jeremy Mincy's of the world, you know, big, strong, powerful defensive ends, that they're strong enough to anchor them. So, I mean, really, that's what you're looking for in a tackle. You know, a guy who's long, a guy who's got good feet, and a guy who's strong enough to, you know, play with power, you know, against those kind of matchups. But, you know, length is, it's not everything, but it's definitely important. I mean, we talked about Light. You know, Light didn't have great length. I'd say his length for a tackle was, you know, probably average. It wasn't elite, but, you know, he was a very good technique player, and he had good feet. And he had very good technique. He just, you know, was always kind of had the perfect, you know, or very close to perfect sets. And he was a very disciplined, focused player. So, you know, again, there's different playing styles. But say those are some of Sebastian's strengths. Those are some of Nate's strengths. Some Marcus's strengths. And it's hard to find a guy, in all honesty, it's hard to find a guy that can play both tackles. I mean, there are a lot of left tackles that would have trouble playing right, and a lot of right tackles that have trouble playing left. To find a guy that can, you know, truly, you know, swing and, you know, play, let's say, to a starter level in this league at both positions is not the easiest thing in the world to find. I mean, there's some really good left tackles, some really good right tackles. You know, not all those guys would be able to play the complementary spot. And again, that's not a good thing or a bad thing. It's just, like we talked about earlier, then. Everybody loved to have a good right tackle. Everybody loved to have a good left tackle. You know, you got a guy who could swing. I mean, that's, you know, that's good too. But you'd be happy with one or the other for sure.
You feel like you have that, Marcus and Sebastian.
Well, they both play. That's what I'm saying. They both play right. I mean, Marcus played right tackle for over half the year. You know, 2 years ago when Sebastian, you know, was injured. You know, he's worked at left tackle. You know, well, he's worked at both tackles through every game this year. So. You know, he's played on both sides. Sebastian's played on both sides. Nate had played on both sides. So, I mean, we're fortunate to have those type of players. It's not always the case at that position. You know, Nick Kasser was another guy that, you know, played left tackle in college. you know, played mainly right for us, but had we ever needed him to go to left, he probably, you know, would have been competitive over there. You know, Logan was really a left tackle at Fresno for 4 years. We put him at left guard because we had Light, but when he had to go to left tackle, you know, a couple of years ago, even though it was, you know, not for a long, but, you know, he was able to, you know, play left tackle. You know, so again, I'm just saying, like, those guys aren't the easiest to find. We've been fortunate to have them. So, all right. See you in Indy.
Yep.